let's not waste any time. Let's get right to it. We are joined by a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. He is host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, host of Open Floor Podcast, friend of this here show, Ben Golliver is my guest. Ben, it's good to have you back. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing well, Jim. Healthy, happy, and I hope the same for you.
Definitely the same for me, and I appreciate it. Good to have you back. Now, Ben, as you've written, the number of new COVID cases in Florida on Saturday was 4,000. That's more than five times the case count when the NBA announced it would be going to Orlando. So when you consider, Ben, the spike in the positive tests in Florida, what kind of thoughts do you have about the players gathering there in the coming weeks?
Well, bad news, Jim. It just passed 5,000 yesterday. So it just gets worse and worse by the day, it seems like. That's the real concern for me, is just not knowing where this thing is going. Of course, if you were the NBA and you could rewind time and you knew, you know, that it would be 4,000 or 5,000 at this point, you might do things differently. You might not want to bring 22 teams. You might not want to play that thing in Disney World in Florida. You might want to pick a different location. I mean, you would just kind of change your entire thought process. But when the NBA selected Disney World, you know, going back a month ago, you know, Florida was in a pretty manageable position. You know, New York and New Jersey were probably the hot spots in the country, and everything seemed like it was lining up pretty well. Then the NBA goes about and creates this document, 113 pages of health and safety protocols for that bubble that they want to build in Florida. And pretty much everything in that document, Jim, is about what happened inside the bubble. It doesn't have to do anything with what's outside the bubble. And so now you're in a situation where a lot of their planning efforts have gone into trying to keep the players safe, and yet you're going to have Disney employees going in and out of the bubble as they work. You know, potentially if a player leaves the bubble just to blow off some steam or whatever, he's going to be at a much higher risk now because the cases there in Orlando have just gotten so prevalent. It's a pretty scary situation. And you top, you know, put on top of that, they want to have media come down here, and you know, other people are going to be having access to this situation. It's a lot of people to put in that bubble, almost 400 players, hundreds of other additional staff members. And to me, you look at the situations, whether it's pro sports, the NFL, the NHL, college football, women's soccer, all of those, Major League Baseball, all of those have been affected with positive tests so far in Florida in just the last week. It just seems like a really, really scary situation.
It's a really comprehensive response. Ben Golliver is joining us. You know, Ben, to your point, it's not really a true bubble, not when Disney employees were allowed or will be allowed to come and go. There's not an explicit statement that the NBA players will be banned if they do leave. How much does it matter what is happening outside the bubble?
Well, it matters a lot because, like you're saying, it's not just about the Disney employees, it's the players too. And what we saw with the case of the women's soccer players, and they just want to go out and have a beer at a bar, right? Even if they're socially distanced, they think they're doing things right. The bars are open in Orlando. You know, it's a common thing you would expect players to want to do, you know, whether it's team bonding or just blowing off steam. And then you wind up and have an outbreak and six or seven of those players test positive, and now they have to withdraw from their women's soccer tournament. They can't even participate because they don't have enough healthy players. Something like that could easily happen. And we're talking about 375 players going down there in a high-stress environment in the playoffs. Everybody's going to be watching these games, millions watching on television. You know, if you have a bad night, what's your, you know, common response? Oh, let's just go, you know, blow off some steam, try to forget about it. You know, they're not going to necessarily have that situation. They're going to be confined to the hotels for a large part. All it takes is one guy to go out and defy the rules, potentially, you know, get exposed, you know, come back in, infect his teammates, infect his opponents, and this thing takes off with inside the bubble. So those risks are very real. They've been something that the NBA has considered all along. But again, it goes back to the idea of the rising case counts in Florida. Those risks might have been, you know, one number a month ago, and now they're four, five, six times greater at this point. It's just a significantly different situation.
Ben, for instance, what if that did happen? What if that did happen to an NBA team? What if all of a sudden you had two or three or four players that are infected on that same team? Is there a point where the league might shut down or suspend the restart, or is it going to go through no matter what, come hell or high water?
Well, their current plan is that if a player tests positive, that they'll keep the playoffs going. That's what they hope for. But, of course, if you reach a critical mass where, say, half a team tests positive, that team basically would have to forfeit, right? You'd have no other way around it, or you'd have to delay the schedule. And that goes back to how they structured this thing. Remember, Jim, they brought 22 teams rather than just the 16 playoff teams, and they're spreading this thing all the way out through October. I mean, it's almost a three-month commitment for the teams that are going to be there until the end. that's a lot of moving parts. If you have a whole team test positive halfway through the middle of it, you can't exactly say, oh, we're just going to shut down for 2 or 3 weeks and still stay on that tight schedule. Now it gets to be even more complicated. So they've kind of boxed themselves into a corner here where they don't have a lot of wiggle room in the schedule. They probably have to go forward if there's positive tests. And really, they're just left hoping that there's no major outbreak that kind of undercuts the competitive issues that we expect from sports. I mean, bottom line, if we go into the finals and one of those teams doesn't have half their players because they're sick, no one's going to view the other team as the legitimate champions, right? They're going to say, oh, it's the ultimate asterisk. They just played against half of their opponents because those guys were sick. And ultimately, the credibility here really matters, not only for crowning the champion, but also for perception of the league. If they get down there and players are testing positive left and right inside the bubble, other guys are getting scared for their safety, or God forbid, someone gets seriously ill or dies, it's going to be a completely different situation for the NBA that could have long-lasting damage to their reputation.
Ben Golver joining us. I mean, so many interesting points in that, Ben. Like, for instance, to that point, in crowning a champion, if, for instance, the league were to make it all the way through and a team does win the NBA Finals, do you have any idea what that moment would be like? For instance, do you think there's going to be a celebration, or do you think there might be absolutely nothing?
Well, you're asking me, Jim, is if instead of handing out those baseball hats, they're going to hand out masks, you know, or they're going to... maybe they're handing out the champagne bottles. They're saying, hey, guys, you know, don't dump it on each other's head. Make sure you're spraying from 6 feet away. I mean, look, everything is going to have to be different. You look at some of the rules they've put in place. They don't want players messing with their mouth guards during games. They don't want guys licking their hands and touching the ball. They don't want guys doing the jersey swaps because, obviously, you know, that's bringing you into close contact with your opponents. I mean, they're trying to legislate some of this stuff out of the game just for the protection and the safety of the players. I mean, even on the bench, they want, you know, the back row bench players who aren't active in the game, they want those guys wearing masks, and same deal with coaches who are on the second bench, you know, for each team. So they're going to be trying to take precautions. But, yeah, if you're in an empty gym and you win the NBA title, I imagine it's a big feeling of relief. I think there would be a celebration because it would sort of be like the last man standing type of situation. But still, it wouldn't be like it normally is where you get to play to the crowd. It wouldn't have that same jubilation, I would imagine. And possibly these guys are saying, thank God it's over. Can we please get out of here? Can we fly home and go back to our family?
You know, Ben, when you lay it out like that, I would say that if you win, it might be harder to win under those circumstances. You've got nothing to apologize for. You know, assuming then, and once we've covered all of this now, what about the matchups themselves? Like earlier this week, Avery Bradley announced that he was not going to participate. How big of a loss is that for the Lakers if he's not going to go to Florida?
Yeah, no, it's a big loss for sure, and you hate to even talk about the basketball implications because he's staying home because, you know, his son is basically at a higher risk, and
right.
He doesn't want to, like, put his family or separate his family or put his son in a situation where he could get sick, and you completely respect that player's decision. We've seen a few other guys do that. I would say big picture, Jim, we haven't seen any superstar-level guys, you know, like the big, you know, top 25-level players say they're not going to play other than a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving, who we already assumed were going to play. So I think from that standpoint, the NBA is kind of exhaling because we saw lots of guys discuss the option of, you know, would it be a distraction to play from the social justice movements? We saw their guys with health concerns. So it seems like this week, pretty much everyone's reported, and I think that's good news for the NBA in terms of their planning. But for the Lakers specifically, you know, their depth, you know, they're a superstar-laden team with LeBron, and Anthony Davis, all those other pieces help. Avery Bradley is a key perimeter defensive player. If you have to go through Houston with James Harden, Russell Westbrook, if you have to go through the Clippers, you know, with their perimeter talent, you could really use an Avery Bradley, and there's not going to be a great option to try to replace what he does. I know people are talking about J.R. Smith. That's just a completely different type of player. He's not this defensive lockdown guy. You know, he's not, you know, he's more interested in hitting threes and getting buckets, and that's not exactly what the Lakers need.
Right. Ben Golver joining us. Ben, one more guy who's not necessarily that top 25 guy, but a really critical player is Lou Williams. And apparently he's still thinking about whether or not he wants to play. How much would that shake things up in the West if he decides to sit out?
No, that's a big one, too, because if we're saying who are the contenders right now, to me it's still the Bucks, the Lakers, and the Clippers. That's your top tier of teams. And you're seeing a guy like Patrick Beverley. I love this, Jim. He's just talking trash almost nonstop. He doesn't want to hear any excuses. He's saying, let's just check ball and go play basketball. And, you know, I love that mentality. But, you know, there's going to be some guys who, you know, are just weighing quality of life issues. Do they want to be away from their families for that long? You know, do they want to be stuck in a hotel room for 3 months and all those kinds of questions? You know, we haven't heard one way or the other definitively for Lou Williams, but I do think it goes back to what the Clippers did at the deadline. I mean, people might have forgotten, you know, they went out and grabbed a Reggie Jackson. You know, they went out and made some other minor moves around the edges, you know, getting a Joakim Noah to kind of fill out their rotation. Those kinds of moves could really come back and help them because Reggie Jackson can pick up some of the ball handling. He could pick up some of the pick and roll stuff. So that was, you know, it could be kind of a blessing in disguise, the type of move that we sweep under the rug when it happens, but maybe a few months later it pays dividends.
Hey, Ben, what about, and we're talking about contenders, so on terms of the Lakers, what about Dwight Howard? I mean, he's been so valuable for them this season. If he decides not to play, what would that mean to them?
No, it's really tricky because, you know, I mentioned Joakim Noah going to the Clippers. Now, all of a sudden, you know, that was a guy the Lakers had looked at previously, so he would be off the table. DeMarcus Cousins has been injured, and, you know, he'd be trying to rush back into this environment. To me, if I was him or his agent, I would say, hey, just stay home and recuperate, right? So that leaves the Lakers potentially with a hole in the middle if Dwight doesn't play. We're still waiting to hear word on him as well. But if you lost both Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard, I mean, that would be, you know, massive hits to a rotation that had just really come into a nice place before the shutdown. They had great chemistry all season long. Everybody had bought into their roles. Dwight Howard was at the top of that list. I mean, I never saw it coming. I thought it was going to be a questionable fit there, and he had enjoyed a really nice year. But, you know, I understand he had some people close to him, or at least one person close to him, passed away here over the last couple of months. I mean, that could be weighing on his mind as well, and I'm sure he has family obligations too. So you never want to judge these guys for sitting out, but there are implications on the championship chase for sure.
Hey, Ben, one more guy. What about the case of Davis Bertans and him not playing for the Wizards? What do you make of that decision, and how do you think that's going to play with his teammates?
I thought there was going to be a lot more Davis Bertans, Jim, because, look, I mean, ultimately he's going into a situation with the Wizards where they have a very small percentage chance of even making the playoffs. So they're essentially signing up to play 8 games that are probably going to be largely meaningless. He's heading into free agency about to get a big payday. Anything he does in Orlando, if he gets injured or any other thing that happens to him, all that does is take money out of his pocket. So I thought there was going to be a lot of players who are in kind of that similar situation who are saying, look, it's in my financial best interest to not play because I don't want to compromise my next contract. So far, he's really the first guy that we've seen do that. But, you know, I think it's a wise and shrewd business decision. If he were to suffer a major injury there, that could cost him tens of millions of dollars. You know, it's kind of a weak free agency crop this year, Jim. His name was actually, even though he's not that well-known of a player, he's towards the top of the list in terms of guys who are really going to cash in and get paid. And so I think he's kind of smart to play defense here. And really, what's the point? I mean, if you're going down there to play 8 games, let's say you lose your first 2 games, you might be eliminated from the playoffs already. And so what was the point of going to this bubble for more than a month? I just don't get it. Personally, if I was the NBA, I wouldn't have even brought the Washington Wizards or some of these other teams. I would have just kept it to the 16 playoff teams, and that way you wouldn't have even put these guys in that position in the first place.
Agreed, Ben. One last thought. It's impossible to predict who's going to win a resumed season because we've never seen anything like this, right? But as we get closer and know that we have a better idea of what life is going to be like in that bubble, what type of team do you think would be best equipped to win?
Well, first of all, I'm going to be real cynical here. I think this basketball is going to be ugly, Jim. You know, you're throwing these guys, you know, after months off, you know, trying to get them back into a situation where they have a couple weeks of training camp to get right. You know, they're going to be worried about their health, and rightfully so. They're probably going to have one eye on the social justice protest, and rightfully so. To me, I think you've got to have a team that can win ugly, right? That can really play defense at an elite level, that can lock down opposing stars. And so that's why I would still favor the Clippers. You know, I think that they were coming together nicely. You've got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard with some more rest and recuperation time, which I think benefits them. You've got basically an entirely veteran rotation from, you know, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley. The list goes on and on. They're really deep, which I think will help in the case of any injury issues that pop up along the way. And then they're motivated. They've never done it before as an organization. Kawhi has, but these other guys haven't. I think everything is just sort of like lining up properly for them. We'll see if it plays out that way. Like you said, it's impossible to know. It's going to be very unpredictable. One team to keep an eye on, though, it would actually be the Toronto Raptors. You know, their coach, Nick Nurse, he's coached everywhere. You know, if you can coach in Great Britain, you know, going down to Orlando and playing in front of no fans, that's not going to throw you off at all. You're going to be just fine. He's very smart and adaptable with his game plans. They have a lot of veteran competitive players, you know, guys like Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. have had some time to rest and recuperate before a playoff push, which is helpful. And they've got great chemistry because they played together all of last season, winning the title. You know, granted, they don't have Kawhi, but they still got a lot of talent on hand. That's sort of like one sleeper team that I actually kind of like potentially to win in Orlando more than I did if we just had the normal playoffs.
That is as good as it gets. That is a great, great NBA conversation. He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post, host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, host of Open Floor Podcast, Ben Golliver. Ben, great job. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, Jim. Take care.
You too. Stay safe. Great, great conversation. Before I go to break, and my thanks to Ben. Really well done by Ben.